Welcome to Opening the Door Podcast. Join me as we unlock the door to our psychic and mediumship abilities. Today you'll hear a conversation I had with Lux and Christiana about astroherbalism. This was so much fun, and I'm sure there's a ton more to dive into on this topic, but this episode will give you a good basic overview. This is my first episode where I interviewed two people on a topic, so that was fun and new, so you'll get to hear that. And if you're interested in shopping with Lux's Apothecary after you listen to this episode, they have offered a discount code for you. So you can use the code OPENINGTHEDOOR for 11% off your first order. I will also put the link to the Apothecary and that code in the show notes for you. Enjoy the episode and remember, don't be afraid to open your door. Today, we're welcoming Christiana and Lux to Opening the Door. As a non-binary medical herbalist, Lux merges Western medicine, folk herbalism, and hermetic philosophy. Using a multidisciplinary integrative approach and working on multiple planes of each individual, their philosophy is to help people heal themselves and activate the innate healing potential within each of us. Christiana is a witch, psychic medium, astrologer, and tarot instructor based in Vancouver, Canada. Christiana has been practicing psychic development, tarot, and evolutionary astrology for about 15 years. As a queer, disabled woman, she is committed to a trauma-informed approach in her work. By merging the realms of psychic mediumship and astrology, she is able to use her gifts to support the intuitive development and personal growth of her clients. Welcome the both of you to Opening the Door.
Thanks for having us.
It's really good to be here. Thank you.
So excited. So one thing I'm going to do, I've never had a double guest appearance on the podcast. So that people can get to know and match your voice with your name, can you both just go ahead and say your name so people can match your voices and your names?
Sure.
I'm Lux.
I'm Christiana.
Okay. All right. Perfect. Well, let's get right into it. So Christiana, people will have heard you by now on your Spiritual Boundaries episode. And so Lux, I kind of want to ask you before we get into the topic of the day, can you tell us a little bit about your spiritual journey?
Yeah, I have been on the spiritual path since a really young age, but didn't really have like the tools or language for it until I was in my late teens and like young adulthood. And I always knew that there was like something more to life than what I was presented with. You know, I grew up in suburbia in Calgary, Alberta, in a very normie life. And, you know, I'm not in a religious family at all whatsoever, but I always had like these really deep, like spiritual feelings and inclinations. And I was just always drawn to them. And then through my education and after getting my formal education and kind of ticking that box, I was like, okay, I need to go deeper into like the mysteries and the spirit. And right now, I mostly study tarot, Kabbalah, like hermetic magic. I'm mostly really deep into the Kabbalah, and like astrology, tarot, and all of hermetics is within the Kabbalah. So I like to go have that as my starting place.
Very cool. And Christiana, can you tell us a little bit about how you got into sort of the spirituality of herbalism and how you mix that with astrology?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So I think like the overarching sort of theme of why I care about both things is that I think like over time, humans have really lost their connection to both plant medicines and astrological energies around us. Like we know that astrology was a huge foundation of knowledge for thousands of years. We know that herbal medicine is something that has always been on planet Earth. Like we know that these systems of knowledge are ancient. We know that they're reliable. And over time, we've forgotten how to use them. So I think that understanding and that knowledge like really inspires me to help educate other people about these things. But specifically like plant magic and plant medicine has always been something that's fascinated me. I have a personal history with gardening in my family. And my grandfather, who's now one of my spirit guides, was an amazing gardener and really taught me a lot about that world. So I have a lot of like deep emotional connection to the world of plants. You can see I have plants. and I also worked as a gardener for several years while I was in university. So It's just something that's very close to my heart.
Love it. Love it. Yeah, I totally agree. I think there is a bit of a disconnection when I think as human beings, sometimes we sort of think of ourselves as separate from nature when that's just not the case at all. And yeah, I think that sort of can hinder our connection to like plant helpers and herbal medicine in general. So how did the two of you start working together in this sort of magical space?
We were internet friends, Instagram friends. And then I actually got a reading from Christiana like probably a couple years ago now. And then we just kind of remained in touch online. And
yeah, and then I bought some Blue Lotus from you.
Oh, yeah. And then we started working together a lot more recently with the retreat that we are planning. By the time this podcast comes out, the retreat will have passed, but I'm sure there will be more in the future. And that is kind of how we're working more deeply together right now.
So, so fun. Internet friends are so special, I think. There's like a really special place for the people that you meet on the internet. Some of them suck, but some of them are so wonderful and these types of things happen. So I love to hear about that. So let's get into the topic of the day, which is astroherbalism. And this was touched upon super briefly in our Spiritual Boundaries episode. And I think it sort of just sparked this interest in me. I was like, oh, we should definitely talk about that on the podcast. And this is how this all rolled together. So can you two define astroherbalism for us?
Yeah, so it's basically the intersections of cosmology and herbalism. And depending who you talk to, but my personal opinion is that those things aren't separate. And like the Hermetic principle is as above, so below, like what is on this planet in nature here mimics what is going on in the sky and the cosmology. And we kind of forget that like we're also in space here when we're on planet Earth. Like we are part of the solar system and this like cosmological community. So in that sense, like what isn't astroherbalism?
Okay. Yeah. It's so funny that you say that because I was actually just thinking the other day, you know, there's so many movies and stuff where people go to space and they land on a planet and they're like, I'm like, oh, they're in space. I'm like we're in space too. Like we are a planet. So, like sometimes we really do forget that. So it's funny you mentioned that because I was just thinking about that the other day. Go ahead.
It kind of touches on what Christiana was talking about in your interests in astroherbalism is this was medicine. This was the sole practice of medicine for a long time. And astrology, medicine, and herbalism weren't separate until fairly recently in human history. So like back in the day, and like the foundation of like our medical system right now is in astrology and herbalism. Like you couldn't be a physician unless you were an astrologer and a herbalist. And if you weren't an astrologer and you were trying to practice medicine, like you were looked down upon. So that was kind of a bit of a mind-blowing realization for me and understanding how to integrate some of these practices into our lives and just how innate this system is.
Ooh, fascinating. Yeah, I didn't know that. So cool. I love looking back in history and seeing how far these things really reach and also sort of wondering like, well, I'm sure there's concrete reasons that we could nail down, but like how it sort of got lost along the way is really fascinating to look at as well. So herbalism in general, and then we're pairing it with astrology. We're doing this really cool thing. Should we be sort of pairing certain herbs based on our astrological sun, moon, and rising signs? Like what, if we get into the nitty gritty of this, what does it look like in our daily lives?
Yeah, in astrology, each planet is associated with certain qualities and energies. And so similarly, herbs are also often associated with specific planetary energies based on their properties, their effects on the body, how we feel those energies intuitively. I think the intuitive side of astroherbalism is such a huge part of it that a lot of people might not realize because they think, okay, like we've got like this corresponds with this and it's very like textbook, but it's very much not. Like it's equally as intuitive. I feel like, for example, Mars is associated with like energy, drive, vitality, and Venus is associated with pleasure, love, and beauty. So there's like different planetary associations. There's going to be different plants that express those energies. And then astro herbalists will use those correspondences to select herbs that kind of align with the dominant planetary influences in your chart. And like the natal chart is such a profound way of understanding the self. It's a self-knowledge system that kind of allows us to go in and look at challenges, patterns within our lifetime, different things that might come up for us, strengths, weaknesses. And the same thing can be said about, you know, our physical constitution in our chart. If we look at it, there are signs that, you know, we can connect to, you know, our lived experience.
Building on what you were saying, part of what I love about astroherbalism is it's constitutional medicine. So, you know, you have all of the signs of the zodiac in your chart, and each of the signs has an element, a mode, and it tells you something about your physical and spiritual and emotional makeup. And plants also have the same type of constitution. So you can kind of get to know the plants and get to know your chart and then pair them accordingly. And something about the language of correspondences, I talk about it as a language, not as something like tables to be memorized. Like that can be useful for sure. And I have lots of books of tables of correspondences. but the most useful thing I think when learning and applying it to your life is to just sit in nature and be in nature with these plants and observe them in their environments, because these correspondences were created by people who were doing that. And if you just put yourself in their shoes and like activate your own intuition, then you just kind of absolve yourself of needing to memorize things. And it can be really overwhelming when you're just dipping your toe into like astrology and herbalism. Like, oh my God, I could spend like an entire lifetime on one of those things. So I really like the approach of like the language of correspondences, where you are sitting with something or a plant or observing a pattern in nature, observing a pattern in yourself and being like, oh, I can see that this is like a fiery pattern, or like, I can see that I'm experiencing inflammation. Oh, it's actually Aries season. It's a very fiery season. Maybe I can choose a Venusian water herb to bring into my life and my body right now to like quell some of that fire.
Very cool. So it's more what I'm hearing, and definitely correct me if I'm wrong or if there's more to say on this, but sort of what I'm hearing is it's working maybe with your chart a little bit, but also with the seasons of each sign, and either transmuting some of that energy that might be coming through that you're having a hard time working with, or amplifying it with an herb if you're really looking to sort of lean into that. Like for an example, an Aries energy, Sagittarius, or Virgo, like whatever season it's in, sort of pairing your herbs with the season that you're in. Am I grasping?
Yeah, totally.
Awesome. Yeah, there's actually like from an astrological perspective, there's so many different ways to work with astrology as a foundation. You could be using locational astrology, looking at the astrology of cities. Like if Lux was traveling, Lux might be in London and looking at the astrology of London and what kind of energy that brings to them and what they can use from that while they're there. What kind of herbs might help them with that? Like you can do something as playful as like locational astrology, or you could use your own personal astrology, your natal chart, your own elements, the elements of the season we're in. There's so many different ways to work with that.
Super cool. So based on this conversation, when you, obviously you, both of you weren't herbalists forever. So did you have any sort of favorite herbals that you were already working with, or that you already like love to drink in tea or something, come to find later when you got into astro herbalism that it made a lot of sense for you or your chart or anything like that?
Yeah, definitely. Blue Lotus is one of my like forever favorites. I'm just obsessed with Blue Lotus. And it's a very, I don't know what the exact astrological correlation is. This is one of those things where it's like, it depends who you talk to will determine the correlations and correspondences, because I've seen some people say like Neptune, I've seen some people say Jupiter for Blue Lotus. I personally feel like it's really watery for me. Like I have almost no water in my chart at all. I have one, and it's Pluto and Scorpio. And so I really like bringing in herbs that are really watery, dreamy, help me with my intuition, get me more into my like feeling self, because that's just something that my personal chart struggles a little bit more with.
That's really cool. Funny because I am all water. Like I have so much water in my chart, and Blue Lotus is also a favorite of mine. So it's like really funny how like you can need it for totally different reasons. Like for me, I use it for like psychic anchoring, like getting into a grounded space. But yeah, Blue Lotus for me, like I associate it very much with water as an element, not really any specific signs, but more specifically the water element. And if I was to associate it with a planet or a sign, I'd probably choose like Pisces or Cancer.
Yeah, I choose Pisces too.
So what are some of your, you mentioned Blue Lotus, what are some of your favorite herbs to work with? Or do you find that it goes sort of seasonally for the two of you?
For me, I work with digestive bitters a lot. So really anything that kind of falls under that category. I think just for me, I have a lot of digestive issues. I have celiac disease. I have social anxiety that gives me stomach problems. Like I have IBS. It's the classic like queer plight of like having digestive issues. So for me, I use a lot of like digestive bitters, like dandelion, things like that. And I try to use dandelion to like invoke solar energy because I really lack that in my chart. So that's kind of a thing that I've been using for years that I feel is very much helpful for my personal constitution, the energies I'm trying to bring in. But recently I've been working with ginkgo a lot because I've been working with the energy of Mercury, Thoth, and Hermes as gods. And like just in my devotional practice, and ginkgo has been used for centuries for memory and cognitive function. And I struggle with that. So fibromyalgia causes memory problems, memory loss. So things like that have been challenging for me. So I find ginkgo has been really helpful for that for me. It's associated with like the mind and all the realms of the mercurial energies.
Lux, what about you?
I use a lot of nervous system herbs and I really do cycle seasonally. I'm very affected by the seasons in terms of like my body temperature and also like my mental state. Like once fall hits, like I will not be warm until spring.
Me too. Yeah. As soon as there's a little chill in the air, it's over for me. I am cold until like April or May, probably May.
Yeah, so I use a lot of like warming herbs and I really try to like get my vital essence like flowing and like opening my circulation pretty much from now until spring. I'll be using those herbs. Like I have a big pot of ginger tea right now. Ginger is one of my favorite allies of all time, partially because it's just so available and it's like one of those, you know, medicinal plants you can get at the grocery store, and it calms your vagus nerve. It like regulates your peristalsis, which is like the nervous signaling that pushes food through your body, which gets really disrupted if people have anxiety or irregular eating habits or things like IBS, SIBO.
I'm just making notes.
And it's incredibly warming and it's stimulating, but not in like such a spicy way. Like there's heating herbs that will warm up the core that won't go out to the extremities, and then there's heating herbs that will push the warmth out to the extremities, and ginger really does that, and it's one of my favorites. Like, and I also get really horrible, not so much anymore, thank God, I've worked on myself a lot, but I had many years of a lot of hormone imbalance and reproductive issues and period pain, and ginger is like one of my strongest allies for that. So much so that I bathe in ginger. I will bathe in ginger.
Love it.
It is amazing. I also have a lot of chronic pain from injuries in the past. So I'm in pain like every day. So I use a lot of anti-inflammatories as well. But ginger like literally hits all of the categories. I'm like my nervous system, my pain, my womb. It's amazing. So I use that one almost every day. Same with Blue Lotus. Those are like my daily drivers. What else do I love? I love milky oat. I think that's one of the most indicated herbs of our time, of our generation. I think almost 99% of people listening to this podcast could benefit from some milky oat. It is incredibly gentle and nutritive. It's a nutritive plants are a category of plants that are kind of like food as medicine. So it has a really wide dosage range and it's very neutral in terms of constitution. So we were talking about like water and fire and like the elemental balance, and like, you know, Christiana and I are completely different like that, but milky oat's incredibly neutral. So it would be good for people who have a very diverse range of constitutions. And it coats the nerves. So it's perfect for those who are like wired and tired, frayed, overstimulated, people who need to like rest and restore, chronic stress.
So like everyone in our society.
This is what I'm saying. It's like the most indicated herb of our time. And like, give me an IV drip of milky oat, please.
Yeah. And I think milky oats is a lesser known, I think when we think of herbs, we think of like peppermint, maybe even apple mint, you know, thyme, rosemary, tulsi, you know, some of these sort of more well-known herbs. And I feel like milky oats is a lesser known herb. Like, what was it? Blue lotus? Like, I've never heard of that before this. So I feel like there's so many, like the world of herbalism is so, so big.
Blue lotus is so next level. Like, I feel like that could be its own like whole saga. Like,
yeah, let's do a podcast on blue lotus.
Blue lotus. Yeah, sure. I absolutely. So how can people find, out of this big wide world of herbalism, how can people find their favorite plant allies that will really work for them?
My favorite way to get people to start is as local as possible. Because, you know, these things like milky oat that are like lesser known grows rampantly here, where I think at least Christiana and I are on the West Coast. It grows even on the East Coast. It's oats. It's the oat plant. Like, this is prolific. But I like to get people to start in their environment and like where they actually are living and like what plants they're naturally drawn to. And there's this saying in herbal medicine that everything you need to heal yourself is within 100 kilometers of where you live and where you are. And I really like that localized approach, because there's a bit of like this trendiness to like exotic plants and herbs. And like, I saw this one study of this one herbal isolate, it has this one action that I really want. And it's like, yes, for sure, that's like a possibility and an option, but I guarantee that you'd probably get a little bit more of like a full holistic experience if you were to like find out the plants in your neighborhood, your vicinity, make medicine yourself by putting your hands on the plants in the soil, in nature, of the environment that you live in, versus like ordering something from across the world. There's a time and a place for that as well. You know, like, there are specific plants that have a specific job that, you know, local plants don't have. But for the most part, people who are like introducing themselves to this craft and this art, like, start with where you are and like observe these things and watch the cycles of nature.
Do you have anything you want to add to that, Christiana?
No, honestly, like, that was so well put. I think like there's so much confusion when it comes to this world, because there's so many things to know. And realistically, like, the best possible thing you can do if you want to get into herbalism is work with a herbalist. Like, that's probably the best thing you can do, is work with somebody who has this knowledge, who can help you get some foundations. I've done this in the past. It's been great for me to find out, you know, what works for my body. Yeah. Or even just like follow your herbalist on social media. Go check out your local apothecaries. Go talk to people in your community.
Yeah, I love that. So this sort of brings up a good question, is about like herbal sourcing. So how would you suggest, either of you, sort of going about sourcing herbs in a way that feels like safe and potent? Because I know like potency can really change throughout, you know, different times when you harvest and like all this stuff. So how would you, or if you have any tips about sort of herbal sourcing?
Yeah, I think there's a bit of a difference if you're using things for magical practice or using things like internally. Magical practice, I feel, is a little bit more lenient with sourcing, because you're not ingesting them. And like, if the herbs are old, you know, they're still going to carry the energetic imprint. But if they're old and you're ingesting them, they're just not going to have the oomph that the fresh herbs will have. So basically, herbalists are the best source. People who have apothecaries, I have a huge apothecary. If you need herbs, call me.
Amazing. We'll link it.
Great. Yeah. If you know the person who's grown or harvested the plants, that's the best. Obviously, that's not always possible. And get familiar with what's endangered is definitely my number one. Like, you know, white sage is a good example. Like, so many magical mystery shops are selling white sage, and you know, the people who it is the most culturally important for are having a hard time sourcing it for themselves. That being said, like, if a shop was just selling mint, that's not endangered and very readily available, grows like a weed, that would be totally fine. So getting familiar with what's endangered and what isn't.
Yeah, and how you feel about that too. I think, you know, staying within your personal ethics when it comes to what we put in our bodies, that's so important, just for me anyway. I think that the energy of what we put in our bodies has a huge effect on us. So it's just important to kind of get clear on what feels right for you and using your intuition to make those determinations, I guess.
Definitely. So if somebody is listening right now, they're feeling really jazzed by astroherbalism, and they're feeling overwhelmed too. I mean, like, we've got herbalism, we've got astrology, and we're combining them in two. So where can they start to just like get their feet wet in this, you know, system of learning? Where did you two begin?
I think a really great place to start is just looking at your sun sign. That's something so simple. Everybody knows their sun sign. Everybody knows that the sun sign is kind of like the main sort of like ego in astrology. And at least that's kind of like how it's understood by most people. I think that's a really great place to start. It's super easy. Like if you're a Scorpio, you might want to work with something that kind of brings in more of the element that you're lacking in your chart, or working with anchoring into the archetypes of Scorpio, working with herbs that are associated with that energy. There's so many different ways to do it. And I think realistically, if you're wanting to start an astroherbalism practice, something as simple as making tea during a new moon is astroherbalism. Like there's literally like so many ways. There's no like wrong way, really. It's an intuitive practice.
I like to think about forming these relationships like courtship, like I would with like a romantic interest or like something like that. And when I'm getting to know a new plant, I actually make offerings to it and I try to like lure its spirit to me. And I'm like, hey, like, can we be in relationship? Like, can I learn from you? Do you want to learn from me? And I really treat it. I like personify the plants and the astrological archetypes as well. And I create this like courtship process with them, which is really fun. And it really lets your intuition unfold as well in a really joyous way. I will also just say I'm teaching a year-long course on astroherbalism right now.
Perfect.
It's called the Astral Apothecary, and it's hosted on the Academy of Oracle Arts, which is where I have done most of my learning of like Hermetics and Kabbalah. And when the sun moves into a new sign, we go over the archetype of the sign, the medical astrology, and then we do a physical apothecary and then a spiritual apothecary and then a ritual at the end. So we started at Aries season this year and we just did Virgo. So Libra will be coming up, but it's like an evergreen course. So once we're done, it'll be available. So that's a good place to start too.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. Sounds like a good comprehensive place to start, which I absolutely love. Very cool.
We have one more thing that I think.
Yeah, go ahead. Absolutely.
I was thinking about this. So one of my favorite things to look at in a natal chart is our Chiron placement. And if you're new to astrology, you might not be familiar with Chiron, but Chiron is an asteroid. It's not a planet, but it shows us where our pain comes from, how to transmute that pain, how to use that pain to heal ourselves and other people. It's referred to as the wounded healer. And in Greek mythology, Chiron was an astroherbalist. He was a centaur who was a healer and an astrologer and a herbalist. And in his myth, he was committed to healing other people, but was cursed with a wound that would never heal. And so his efforts to heal himself were through healing others, even though his wound never healed, he just continued. And it's kind of like that message of like what hurts us also heals us and heals others. So it's kind of about transmuting pain, darkness, and going really deep into our healing process. Chiron is not an easy placement to work with in your chart, but it can reveal a lot about how you are experiencing pain in this lifetime, where your shadows come from, how to work with that. So if you're curious about getting really, really deep into your healing practice, that's a great place to start, but it is kind of a heavy place to start. But if you like to just rip off the Band-Aid and go nuts like me, then go for it.
Ooh, cool. I love that. That feels like really good detailed advice for, yes, somebody who might just sort of want to rip into it, which if that's you, go ahead. Sometimes I'm like that too. So yeah, absolutely love that. So I kind of want to tell me if this makes sense to do, because it might not, but I kind of want to go through not each sign, but each like air, fire, water and earth, and maybe just name a few like herbs that might be good wit to work with through each of those delineations. Would that be, does that sound like something that would work? Or
hell yeah.
Okay, cool. All right, let's start with air then. So if we're in an air season or an air sign. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Lux.
So in order to do this, we have to understand the concepts of sympathy and antipathy. So a sympathetic plant is going to increase, it's like we're talking about air, right? A sympathetic plant is going to increase air energy, and an antipathetic plant is going to decrease air energy. And it's really, really important to know the difference between them, because you can have plants that are under the rulership of like Libra or air, but they might have a different effect. So you kind of have to know like what you're going for and what the plant is doing. Like, cause if you're like, oh, I have this super fiery transit, I'm a fiery person, let me just take this list of fire herbs, like you'll probably have an accident or like a flare up or something like this.
Burnout.
So antipathy and sympathy are things we need to know when we're going to be listing herbs and talking about them and potentially using them in our bodies and our lives.
Okay. Yes, totally. Very important, I think, for us to start this process. So, all right, well, let's start with air. So if we're in an air season, or if you are, you know, have an air heavy chart.
Yeah. So some sympathetic herbs. So this is like air will increase the air. Rosemary would be like that. Ginkgo would be like that. Things that stimulate like cerebral circulation. What else? Things that are like vata type plants, like verbena would be really good to ground air energy, because it's bitter, it's cooling. It's going to bring some of that like erratic energy down into the body. The medicinal mushrooms would be really good as an antipathetic to air energy as well.
I was just going to say that. I was like, my chaga would probably be helpful.
Yeah. Things that like sedatives are going to be antipathetic. Stimulants are going to be sympathetic.
Cool. All right. I don't know. Who should we do next? Earth?
Sure.
Super grounding. I feel like cinnamon to me gives me earth energy and fire energy simultaneously, but I burn a lot of cinnamon, so that might just be me.
I mean, that makes sense. In medical herbalism, it's sweet. Like the sweet taste is earth, and then like the spiciness is warming, and it also balances blood sugar. So it balances like imbalanced earth.
Let's go fire.
Fire, we have like our anything hot, our spices, so like ginger, cayenne, xanthoc xylem, which is prickly ash, devil's club, which is part of the ginseng family, it's like the North American ginseng. But things that would be antipathetic to fire would be our mints, things that are cooling, anything bitter. Anything bitter is going to have a net cooling effect on the body. There's very few, like maybe 5 plants that are warming bitters, but generally speaking, the bitter taste is going to cool you down and drain the fluids. So good to know.
Cool. I love that. And I will say, as a Sagittarius, I do love ginger. Like the spicier, the better with my ginger tea. And I love a good mint too. So, and sometimes I will combine them. I do this thing where I will, and I found this on the internet, this was not my invention, but I blend up like a nice big chunk of ginger, raw honey, and lemon, and I'll freeze it into cubes, and then I put it into peppermint tea. So I'm kind of doing both at once. I don't know if it balances itself out. Totally. But okay, lastly, we have water signs.
I feel like kelp for me, like I don't know if this is random, but I put it in my baths. Like I use it a lot in like soups, like things like that. Like it's kind of random, but I feel like that's very watery.
Definitely. It's an ocean plant.
Yes.
Lives underwater.
Very cool. Lux, do you have any for the water signs?
Water.
Yeah. So things that are like really juicy and have a lot of water content in them naturally. Blue lotus is definitely a water plant. Marshmallow root.
Aloe.
Aloe for sure. Yeah, a lot of the cactuses, anything that's got like juiciness to it is definitely going to be a water plant.
Amazing. Well, this has been such a cool conversation, and it's really opening you know, the door to a world that we have not yet explored on the podcast, which I absolutely love bringing, you know, brand new content and stuff like that. So I'm going to have one more question for the two of you. I want each of you to answer. And that's just that, how can someone who's listening right now open up their door to connecting more to their plant friends and plant allies in terms of herbalism?
For me, I think gardening really unlocked like a major thing for me when it came to working with the energies of plants, planting and growing and tending to my own plants and putting my own intention into those plants. This can be with houseplants. This can be with a garden outside, community garden. That completely changed the game for me. I also think just researching, learning, starting to read on it, watch documentaries, and specifically elders. If you know any elders in your community who are working in herbalism, that is the knowledge source we should be going to. I think realistically, like the more we spend time on social media, the less we're spending time with elders and the people that have the knowledge in our actual communities, because these are the people that are not accessible in those spaces. So that for me has been a huge learning thing. Like I've learned so much about plant medicine from people that have been teachers, mentors, elders in my community.
Yeah, mine is similar. Just go to the forest and sit in it. Like go off the path and just like take a seat. And it doesn't even have to be the forest. Just go into nature and just like sit down and like observe and watch nature pass you by and like do like a exercise in focus where you like look really, really deep into like this little tiny area in front of you and then draw your focus outwards and look at like the big picture of all of the nature and like the vast expanse of whatever's around you and get familiar with observing, slowing down, letting nature speak to you, and also playing with like the lens in which you see the world.
Ooh, love that from both of you. Oh, such good advice here. Where can listeners find the two of you if they want to learn more about what you're doing? And maybe do some astro herbalism classes or retreats with the two of you.
Yeah, we're both on Instagram. My Instagram is Earthside Medium. My website is earthsidemedium.com. There's a retreats page on my website, an events page. So any of the upcoming events that we will be hosting will be posted there.
And I'm on Instagram. My personal is Lux the Herbalist. And you can find my apothecary shop at House of Origins Apothecary.
Amazing. Well, thank you again to the two of you just for coming on here and sharing your knowledge and your energy with the world. I'm so grateful that you took the time and that we found the time to do this.
Yeah, Haley, no problem. Can I share one more thing?
Absolutely.
So I feel like the last question you asked when Lux was talking, I kind of was just like, oh, wait, there's still one more thing. And I feel like when it comes to integrating any witchy practice into your routine, it's really important to deeply personalize these practices. It really ensures that you're never going to feel like you're putting on someone else's routine. And if that doesn't feel right, it's probably not right. And intuitive practices are intuitive. It's all about feeling into, you know, does this feel right for me? Does this feel right for my body? So I think that's probably the best piece of advice I can give on a personal level to anyone starting this journey.
Yeah. And I think especially when we talk about herbalism, right, because we're either, you know, working with oils or putting actual herbs in our body through tea and tinctures and other things. So yeah, super fantastic advice to end on. And again, thank you to the two of you so, so much for taking the time.
Thank you for having
me. Thank you so much, Haley.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you love the podcast and listen on Apple, please be sure to rate and leave a review. If you want more from Opening the Door, follow along on Instagram at Opening the Door Podcast. Have a question about psychic work or psychic development? Email openingthedoorpodcast@gmail.com and you might have your question included in one of our future Q&A episodes.